The 920 KVEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kvec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 01111911.
Our next guest on Hometown Radio is no stranger. Dr. Larry Martinez has been a good friend and a regular contributor to this broadcast since our very early days. And Larry travels the world, and wherever he goes, he takes us with him. With that in mind, we welcome Larry back to the broadcast. Larry, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, Dr. Dave.
What'd you bring me? What'd you bring me from Jordan? Larry Martinez went to Jordan. All he got was his T-shirt. All right. This started out, you were scheduled to go to a conference.
Yeah, originally this was a 2-week trip to Vienna, where since 2016 I've been a official observer for the International Institute of Space Law of the proceedings of the United Nations Outer Space Committee. And so in late April, the legal subcommittee was meeting, and so I had made arrangements then to represent the International Institute of Space Law there and to pick up the latest, legal definitions and debates ongoing about the rise of commercial space. And so it's a very, very interesting place to be, because recently, just 4 months ago, there was a major radio conference held by the International Telecommunication Union that allocated frequencies to these really rapidly expanding commercial space services. And so this was a really good chance to see it. Meanwhile, friends of mine, my old UCSB college roommate and graduate school PhD program colleague, Tom Rogers, he and his wife have lived in Egypt for several years. They've lived in Russia for several years, in Croatia, Pakistan, more recently in the Republic of Georgia. And wherever they go, I try to visit them. And they said, look it, we're in Amman, Jordan. And while you're in Vienna, why don't you come down and see us? And so
what does he do?
I played hooky from the UN committee and flew down to Jordan.
What does he do that he travels like that?
What? Who? What,
Tom Rogers. What does he do?
Oh, he and his wife work for the State Department.
Okay.
So his wife is works for USAID in very interesting to see the size of the U.S. Embassy in Amman, Jordan. Amman, Jordan is the capital of the country. And very interestingly, that U.S. Embassy just bought adjoining villas that were directly adjacent to the embassy itself. And they're, the plan is to expand that embassy. Jordan is one of these stable countries of the Middle East, and it is rapidly becoming a major focus for U.S. diplomatic efforts in the region.
And Jordan, for the geographically challenged, borders Israel.
Jordan is in the middle. It borders Iraq. It borders Syria. It borders Saudi Arabia. It borders Israel. And it borders Lebanon.
Had you been there before, Larry?
No. It does not border Lebanon directly. Okay. It borders, the border comes up to the Sea of Galilee. And remember, these are contested borders.
Yes.
And so it's complicated. It's just like the film. It's complicated. I had been in Israel in 2008, and had traveled up to the Sea of Galilee. Our friends took us by car up to the Golan Heights, where you can see Lebanon, Syria, and so forth. While I was in Jordan, I knew what I was looking at because I had been to the Golan Heights before, which is above the Sea of Galilee. We were below the Sea of Galilee at a archaeological site right at the Syrian-Israeli border, and we could see Mount Hermon, which is in Lebanon. That's 10,000 foot high mountain with snow on it, and so you could see it from where we were on the Jordan side of the Syrian-Jordan border.
Any hesitation given current events about going into Jordan that close to Israel?
Well, as recommended, I register with the U.S. State Department. They have a program that encourages U.S. travelers going abroad to register. And so if there is a warning, you get warnings from the U.S. State Department for the regions that you told them that you were going to visit. Well, and I had my friends there, and so I had just arrived in Vienna for the UN meeting when Iran launched the drone attack against Israel. And so I quickly got in contact with my friends in Amman, and I received no warnings from the U.S. State Department other than the cursory ones that are always there. And they said they watched the show as the drones and the airplanes and the interceptors, but most of the drones were intercepted long before they got into Jordanian airspace. Hmm. Other airlines canceled their flights. I had booked on Royal Jordanian Airlines because it's always better to fly with the national airline of that country rather than another airline.
For
instance, I wouldn't want to be flying around that region in a German airline. So Lufthansa had canceled flights, or what they were doing is the other European airlines were flying around Sinai before they would come up land in Amman. Royal Jordanian, we flew in. It was a night flight. On their recommendation, I had upgraded because they were consolidating flights, and if you didn't have a seat, there was a possibility of overbooking, so I made sure that I upgraded. And as we're flying into Jordan, of course, all these countries are very small. You're coming in over the Mediterranean, you can see the Israeli coastline, and then you're coming in over Israel, and I could identify Ben-Gurion Airport and then Jerusalem. And right as we were flying over Jerusalem, I'm looking out the window down at the ground. This is at night, you know, with the lights.
Yep.
And somebody on the ground has a green laser, and the green laser illuminates our plane as we're coming in just south of Jerusalem. And that's very interesting. It's illegal in the United States, and it's probably illegal in Israel. I don't know who shined the green laser at our Royal Jordanian airliner, but it happened. And but a few minutes later, we landed no problem in the Queen Noor airport south of Amman.
They were just welcoming you to Jordan, Larry. That's just that's what it was. All right, Dr. Larry Martinez is here sharing with us his recent trip to Jordan and particularly to Petra. We'll pick up the conversation as we continue right here on Hometown Radio. This is the Dave Congleton Show, always your hometown radio talk show. Dr. Larry Martinez is just back from a two-week trip, which included a visit to Jordan. We'll get to Petra here in a little bit. But Larry, as we're back with you, I want to hear first general impressions about Jordan as a country. I've not been, I don't know anything about it other than Petra, but it sounds like a fascinating place.
Yeah, Jordan is, of course, a very new country, even though the area of the Middle East is ancient. You can look at, for instance, the city of Jericho, and archaeologists can track it back 9,000 years. The country of Jordan was formed as a result of World War I, where the European allies, Sykes-Picot, you know, famous, the two diplomats famously drew up boundaries of the defeated Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire, which was based in Constantinople, now known as Istanbul, had ruled this whole Middle Eastern region for hundreds of years. And so with the defeat of the Ottoman Empire, along with Germany and Austria in World War I, new boundaries were drawn. And this created Palestine and Jordan and the boundary lines for the other countries of Lebanon, Syria, and Saudi Arabia, and so forth. Hmm. So it's very, very interesting. The country itself is very diverse. Many of the people you meet there are Palestinian, or they can be of other Arab origins, and a very, very large number of Bedouin people live in Jordan. And I have to say that one of the great pleasures of traveling in Jordan is just meeting the people. They are extremely hospitable, very, very outgoing in terms of helping you when you are obviously lost or whatever, and just a really, really positive experience interacting with all the people that we met on this trip.
So what was the atmosphere like given the recent events in the Middle East?
Okay, here's the negative of it. As arriving in Queen Noor Airport just after this Iranian drone attack that everyone in Jordan had been witness to, is that, and with this Israeli war against Hamas going on in Gaza, which is really only, you know, 40 miles away, is that there was definite coolness of the probably Palestinian customs authorities in Jordan. So when we got there, it was a Royal Jordanian flight, but we're a very mixed, you know, set of passengers. And so I put my American passport down, and it was sort of stamped precursorily, and then just kind of thrown back at, not thrown, but, you know, just sort of, okay, here it is. You know, not the normal politeness that you normally get when you go through a passport customs control. Hmm. So, and then I asked my friends about it, and they said, yeah, there's definite among some groups, and some of them are in the government, there's a definite antipathy towards people in Europe and North America that has been brought to the surface now by the Gaza situation.
Wow. So did this come up in conversation at all in terms of interacting with people? Were they asking you as an American?
Well, not people are not going to, strangers that you meet are not going to raise this. Normally, you are conducting a transaction, or you're asking directions or service or whatever, and it doesn't come up. Of course, my friend, Tom, I mean, he and I did our PhDs in political science at UCSB at the same time. And, of course, then on our hours we spent in the car going all around Jordan, we debated all of these things extensively. And then when we did meet some people that we knew already, is that we could engage them with some discussions about what is going on and the likely aftermath of the Iranian drone attack with the Israeli counterattack. And so all of this goes to point out, and I think this is where my experience was really quite typical, is that Jordan is in the middle of all of this war and conflict, but it itself is very calm. You would not notice that anything is going on outside of its borders just by what you see within Jordan.
Hmm.
And it's Amman is a huge city. It is very, very interesting city with hills everywhere. I mean, there's not a flat spot in Amman. I mean, it is hills, 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 and hills, and the traffic to match, okay? And so when you drive downtown, and you know, my friends wanted to show me the Roman Theater downtown, and then the Citadel, which are the two ancient you know, archaeological sites of downtown Amman, you quickly gather that this city is really booming. It Jordan is actually benefiting quite a bit from the fact that there is a brain drain, I believe, of people leaving conflicted areas and seeing Jordan as a really suitable place for moving ahead if you are planning on some kind of commercial venture or whatever. Jordan provides a very stable platform for doing business in the Middle East. And the Jordanian currency stays very strong. And even though Jordan is shouldering a lot of burdens because of the fact that there have been refugee camps in Jordan since 1948. We drove past one of the big refugee camps, but it doesn't look like a refugee camp because there are no tents there. It's been there since 1948, and the residents have built buildings.
Really?
So it's very, very interesting to see the various stages through which Jordan and the Middle Eastern region are evolving. And, of course, what I was talking about before with the increase in the size of the U.S. embassy there, it appears very evident that there's going to be an increased United States focus on using Jordan as a major, let's say, area of diplomatic outreach, because it is a country that is so far very, and we hope it stays that way, very stable, and there's no conflict going on inside the Jordanian borders.
Dr. Larry Martinez on this broadcast. We'll pick this up when we start talking about Petra, but I just want to underscore, as Larry shares with us his visit, you weren't part of a tourist group. You were with your buddy, or you're on your own.
Yeah, we were. This is not a tour group or anything. I mean, we were just like regular people with a car with Jordanian plates on it, and we're just driving around just like everybody else. So,
hey, what side of the road do they drive on?
Well, on the right. It's all, even though it was formerly colonized, you know, by the Brits. They maintain driving on the right.
All right. Dr. Larry Martinez is with us. We're going to go do news, traffic, and weather, come back, and then let's go to Petra and hear Larry's impressions of that magical, mystical place. You're listening to Hometown Radio for the Central Coast. It is the Dave Congleton Show. We'll be right back. Just joining us, my guest is Dr. Larry Martinez, just back from 2 weeks overseas, including time in the country of Jordan, and more to the point, a visit to Petra. How do we explain that, Larry? What exactly is Petra?
Yeah, Petra is now listed as one of these super UNESCO cultural sites. The Lonely Planet Guide describes it as one as truthfully one of the seven wonders of the world, and it really is something that everybody who has an interest in history and the Middle East and so forth should definitely have it on their bucket list as a place that you really want to see. And I was just so fortunate to be able to see it, ironically, in a bad time politically for the region, being the conflict with Gaza and so forth. But that meant that there were no tourists because when we got there to Petra, it takes about 4 hours to drive from Amman down to Petra, which is about 100 kilometers north of the Red Sea. It's slightly southwest then of the Dead Sea. And we got there and checked into our hotel, for which we had gotten an automatic upgrade because there were so few tourists around that the hotel had consolidated all the tourists that were formerly in the other building, which was not quite as nice a building. And they put us in the better building with a better view for the same price. And so they just consolidated everybody into the Petra Moon Hotel in the town of Wadi Musa. Wadi Musa is the actual town at the visitor center and entrance to Petra.
All right, so there's no actual city of Petra. It's this other place.
Well, Petra is an ancient city, but it does not exist as a city any longer. The right. city is Wadi Musa, and so this is where all of the tourist infrastructure, the visitor center, and everything is located in Wadi Musa. So you drive to Wadi Musa, you check into your hotel, and then you start walking down the trail after you pay for the entrance fee and so forth. And the closest equivalent to it is Zion National Park in Utah, because Zion also has these fabulous colors of the sandstone in the desert. And this is what you see in Petra, in Wadi Musa, as you walk to Petra, because what it is actually a type of a earthquake fault that has split the rock so that there is this very narrow little canyon with these towering sandstone, you know, the bright red, brown, green, blue tinted sandstone on each side of you going up 60, 70 feet. And you're walking down this very narrow walkway. And so my friend Tom said, okay, Larry, you got to be right here, okay. And then you go around a little corner in this very narrow, in parts it is less than 10 feet wide. And so there you turn the corner, and then there you see it. And it's this huge four-story high carving into the sandstone of this, it looks like a type of a Greek Roman temple, and you only see a slice of it, but the impact is immediate when you see it, because you've just been in this rock sandstone gorge, you know, without direct light or anything. This is late in the afternoon, and then you see it, and this is the famous treasury, and this is the first view people get of what is actually the remnants of a megalopolis 2,000 years ago that was one of the most important cities of the Middle East for trade.
How far did you walk? How far did you walk on the trail?
Well, it would be about a mile and a half. I would estimate from the hotel all the way down to the treasury, it was about 30 minute walk. And so then the beautiful thing was that because of the conflict in the area that has discouraged tourism, we were alone. I mean, literally, there were probably only 10 or 15 other people in this whole area in front of the treasury. I later found out that normally, in a normal tourist day there, there are between 400 and 500 people there. And we literally were there with 15.
Amazing.
Yeah, totally amazing. I mean, this was one of these lucky occurrences. And the site of Petra goes on, and it's a much, much larger site. it's something like being at Zion, the size of Zion. If you can, you know, equivalate the you know 4 or 5 miles to get through the Zion Valley there of the major sites. Well, so too with Petra. What you are seeing in Petra are all of these carved tombs that are carved into this bright red sandstone, juxtaposed against the bright blue sky of a desert environment where the air is extremely dry, and you're walking on these very dusty walking road areas that is awash. I mean, it is literally like Zion. Zion is the Virgin River, and if you're not careful in Zion, you can be hit by a flash flood caused by a thunderstorm upstream. And the same thing at Petra is that one of the warnings is that if there's a thunderstorm anywhere, they have to evacuate the area because you can be literally killed by a flash flood going through Petra.
Jeez.
So anyway, so the first day I spent some hour and a half or so on my own walking up to the royal tombs. So after you see the treasury, you come down and you're walking downhill in this giant wash where they built the city, the Roman city, and all these tombs. There's nothing really left of the city because they were living in Bedouin or probably Bedouin-like tents, and that does not survive the passage of time. What survives are all of the tombs that were commissioned and built by wealthy trading families who had made their fortunes off of the trade coming up from India and Saudi Arabia and so forth, of spices and food and frankincense and myrrh and silk from China and so forth. It was all coming through this area, destined for, initially, for the Roman markets. Hmm. Remember, Constantine put the capital of the Eastern Roman Empire at Constantinople in today's Turkey, and then farther east you had eventually then the Roman Empire in the Dalmatian coast and then Italy itself, and they were all buying these products, which made Petra extremely wealthy. And these tombs are the archaeological leftover of that wealth that are visible today because those wealthy families carve them into these sandstone cliffs in a very, very dry environment.
What kind of time era are we talking about? How old is all this, Larry?
2,000 years.
Wow.
Then it was lost to the Europeans about 300 years ago because, remember, trade shifted with the Portuguese and the Spaniards and the Dutch and the Brits all going around Africa to India and the Spice Islands. And so that trade that normally went up through the Middle East, that trade dried out. I mean, it literally went away because of the competition posed by the initially Vasco da Gama from Portugal that proved that you could sail all the way to India.
Hmm.
And so Petra disappeared. And for 300 years, Europeans did not know about it until the early 1800s, about 1830, when a Swiss traveler who was a real aficionado of Roman and ancient civilizations in the Middle East, he heard about it from these Bedouins. And initially, they did not want to tell Europeans about Petra. Eventually, he was able to get them to show him where it was, and then the word was out. And so it's only been known, really, for since about 200 years.
Based on the limited reading I've done on Petra, what I've read, Larry, is that at its height, it was a very sophisticated construction. Canals and waterways, whatever. They're very sophisticated for its time.
Yeah. You can see the remnants where the city center was and where the later the Romans had built. You can see the Roman columns and the Roman cardo, which is always the main street in a Roman town. And you can see that. The population was at least around 30,000 people lived there.
All right, Dr. Larry Martinez just back from Jordan with particular emphasis on Petra. We'll come back for a final segment. I'm Dave Congleton. We're live, we're local, we're hometown. All right, we're in our final segment with Dr. Martinez just back from Jordan and Petra. Larry, on the Stolberg text line, listener wants to know if you could tell us if it is possible to go inside the treasury at Petra. I have heard that it is locked.
You can go inside, but there's nothing to see. So,
The treasury?
The treasury, it's just called the treasury because somebody thought it looked like a treasury. It's the facade of a huge tomb. And so there used to be the wealthy dead people buried inside, sort of like Valley of the Kings in Egypt, except though there in Egypt you don't see this this facade on the outside typically. They were trying to hide the tombs. In Petra, they were publicizing it with these huge, magnificent facades.
Hmm. What about the strenuousness of the hikes? Do I have to be in shape to visit Petra?
You can. They have. Okay, you can ride a you can ride a donkey, a horse, or a golf cart down to the treasury. And then once you get to the treasury, you have your choice of camels, donkeys, or horses, and also some golf carts to take you farther down to where there's a restaurant near where the departure point is to the monastery. To get to the, all of that is downhill, and it's a very nice, gentle slope. You should be in reasonable shape because coming back can be quite hot, you want to, take care that you have enough water and a good hat, sunglasses, everything. To get to the monastery, though, the monastery is the 800 steps up, and these are not nice regular steps. These are old steps carved into the sandstone, and they're being traversed. You're sharing all those 800 steps up with donkeys that other people have hired and horses and their drivers, the people encourage them to go up the hill. You get to the monastery, which looks which is bigger than the treasury, and then from there I climbed even higher up to the outpost from where you could look over into Israel and into the Sinai Desert. And a very, very great view up there from this Bedouin tent that's on top of this huge rock overlooking the monastery, and a fantastic view. But you do have to be in good shape to go up to the monastery.
You didn't take a camel. You should have taken a camel.
Yeah, I should. Yeah, and in Vienna, one of the most famous cafes is called Zum Schwarzen Kamel, at the Black Camel. How ironic. There you are. I should have done the camel.
You were there a weekend. Was that enough time?
Well, no, it's not. But, I had to fit it into my other responsibilities because then I had to fly back to Vienna and go to the meeting of the Legal Subcommittee on Outer Space. While we were in Jordan, it was very, very interesting because on my last day there, we drove from Amman up to the Syrian border to see this Roman ruin called Qais. And so it's right at the intersection of Israel, Syria, and Jordan with the Sea of Galilee in the backdrop, in the background. And on the drive back, the GPS started going crazy, And it turns out the Israelis are interfering with GPS to defeat drone attacks. And the effect was that we were driving and trying to get through this town of Irbid in the north of Jordan to get onto the main highway back to Amman, and our GPS would go nuts, and then at one point then it would say, actually, our location is we're in the middle of the Beirut airport in Lebanon. That's what the GPS told us. And I had three GPSs. You know, Dave, whenever I go to a country, I get a local SIM card. So I had one phone on the local SIM card. I had one phone on my German SIM card. And I had one phone on my American SIM card. They were all messed up in terms of the GPS. So that on the way into Umm Qais, it had taken us 10 minutes to get through Irbid. On the way back, it took us an hour because of all the GPS spoofing that was sending us on the wrong route, and then it would then give us our location as being in the middle of the Beirut airport.
I'm still struck by the fact that you travel with three cell phones. You're a serious traveler. What would Rick Steves say?
Yeah.
Now, did you go to the Dead Sea?
Yes, and then before that, we on the drive from Petra back to Amman, we decided to go over the mountains to the Dead Sea and then proceeded up the Jordanian side of the Dead Sea up to the top of the Dead Sea. And we arrived just at a few minutes before closing at a visitor center, which is right on the Jordan River, which is the spot where the Bible says that Jesus was baptized. And so we went to the visitor center just to see what we could see before they closed the whole park down for the evening. And lo and behold, there was a whole wall of pictures of VIPs that had visited this religious site. And one of the VIPs that had visited, I took a picture of it, was Vladimir Putin in 2007.
Really?
Yes.
All right, the big question, the food in Jordan, how's the food? What do you eat?
The food is, the only word that comes to mind is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It is really incredibly good, and we were very lucky because of the lack of tourists meant that the restaurants were not overflowing with tourists. The wait staff was extremely attentive. And the food, I love eating lamb or mutton, and the hummus, the vegetables, and then on our drive up the Dead Sea, of course, that area of Jordan has a water supply, and my friend Tom had lived for several years in Egypt and so forth, so he could speak some Arabic. And so we would stop at these Bedouin vegetable fruit stands, and I'm telling you, these are the sweetest melons I have ever eaten. They were fantastic. Green peppers, all kinds of vegetables, and they were fresh. I mean, picked that day, and we picked them up and enjoyed them there back when we got back to Amman.
We have multiple texts coming in on the Stolberg text line, all of them very appreciative for this conversation. I'm particularly struck by Don in DePalma, who's writing, what a contrast, everything from outer space law to visiting ancient Petra. Fascinating.
Yeah. Well, and it's really interesting because these ancient cultures really were very attentive to the skies. Remember in the story of Christmas and the three wise men who saw the sign in the skies, I mean, outer space and visiting the Middle East is a visit back to the center of scientific learning about space hundreds and thousands of years ago.
I'm still thinking of one of my favorite jokes. Milton Berle's on the David Letterman show, and he said, when David Letterman was born, there was a star in the east, me. Well, I got about 90 seconds, Larry. What came out of the Outer Space Conference? Anything we should be aware of?
Well, the Outer Space Conference, I mean, it was fantastic timing because I was able to go back to the legal subcommittee with personal experience of cyber warfare using outer space. And so the fact that the Israelis are messing around with the GPS signals means that, indeed, my topic of research and publication, which is cyber conflict in outer space, is a very timely topic, and it's going to be very, very interesting to see how this evolves in the future.
You're off to Poland next month?
Yeah, I'm giving a talk on these commercial systems that are in the crosshairs of international conflict. And so Krakow, Poland invited me to give a keynote address at their Outer Space Resource Conference the third week of May.
All right, Dr. Larry Martinez, always a pleasure. We can squeeze this in. I got 30 seconds for a final thought about Jordan.
Yeah, I would encourage your listeners, when you get a chance and you think about where you could travel, is put Jordan on your list, and especially Petra. And I don't think you're going to be disappointed. The first sight of the treasury as you come and walking down the Sikh is mind-blowing.
All right, Larry, travel safe. Thanks for sharing. Appreciate it very much. Off we go. We got news, traffic, weather. Back on the other side, Stu Jenkins talks about the Supreme Court and the fact that they took up a case for the first time in 40 years involving homelessness. What exactly does it mean? Stick around and find out.
The 920 KBEC Podcast Network is presented by the Slo County Real Estate Podcast with Hal Swayze. Up-to-date information on the local real estate market on your time. New episodes weekly at the podcast link at 920kbec.com and wherever you get your podcasts. California DRE 0111-911.